Forgive me, I'm only here till tomorrow, but I'll be back again for a more extended visit in June. And I think it's because it's Memorial Day weekend. You can probably expect that there'll be... Is this on? Is the button on? Oh, there's no button. Oh, there is. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I guess it helps. Oh, yeah. Okay, we got a stack here. Because it's Memorial Day weekend, I expect that there'll probably be less people here. Some people have gone away for the holidays. So I'll try to come at least for another Wednesday or Sunday program. But today, I'm going to... I'm just going to continue reading where I spoke from last Sunday in Hartford. I can't remember the verse number. 10th chapter, Bhagavad Gita, Opulence of the Absolute. And just towards the beginning.
4:5.
4:5. Okay. Yes. Yes, I just found it. Bhagavad Gita 4:5. And we didn't cover very much of the purport. I think we only read a few sentences. And we spoke about that last week, and there's a lot more in the purport. So I'll continue. I'll read the Sanskrit and then the translation first. Buddhya jnanam asamoha kshama satyam dhamashama sukham dukham bhavo bhavo bhayam cha bhayam eva cha ahimsa samata tushtish tapo danam yasho yasha bhavanti bhava bhutanam mata eva pritat vidha. Translation. Intelligence, knowledge, freedom from doubt and delusion. Forgiveness, truthfulness, control of the senses, control of the mind, happiness and distress, birth, death, fear, fearlessness, nonviolence, equanimity, satisfaction, austerity, charity, fame, and infamy. All these various qualities of living beings are created by me alone. So we're reading, as we said before, this chapter is entitled The Opulence of the Absolute. And Krishna, in this chapter, is explaining how he is the origin of all opulences. They all find their origin in him, and he is the Lord of all opulences. And these opulences are described, as we spoke a little bit about last week, in this chapter, to help us appreciate Krishna. And the more we know of Krishna's opulences, I think the example that is given, I read it somewhere, probably Surrender Unto Me, which is the summary study of Bhagavad Gita, which is from the commentaries of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Srila Baladeva Vibhushan. But it explains there that just like if you have a person that you know, an acquaintance, and then you later find out something about him, something like that he's a billionaire, for instance. You didn't know it before, but when you hear how he's a billionaire, then although you didn't see him in that light before, but when you see him now all of a sudden as a billionaire, your attitude changes. And then you find out more. Not only is he a billionaire, but he's a big philanthropist, or so many things. Of course, this is a mundane example, but nonetheless, it helps us to appreciate the analogy in relationship to Krishna, that oftentimes we think of, oh, Krishna's God. Well, okay. A lot of times some people will say, well, I know Krishna, and satisfied to know Krishna. But the more we know about Krishna, and we were speaking about this also, I guess it was 2 days ago in the Shingadev's appearance day. There's an expression, to know him is to love him. So the more we know more about him, the more it increases our attraction to him. So, in this chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is describing himself, because he's the Supreme Lord and he has to talk about himself. Ordinarily, we may think that somebody who talks about themselves, puts himself at the center of a conversation, this might be a little bit egotistical. But Krishna, because he's the Supreme Lord, he has to speak about himself, because everybody's supposed to know him. And everybody, by dint of their knowledge of him, should serve him. Krishna says, I am the source of material and spiritual worlds, the wise know this perfectly, they serve me. They worship me with all their hearts. So Krishna speaks about himself, not as an egotistical person, but for our benefit. Because the fact of the matter is, the more we know Krishna, the more we benefit. It's just that simple. Because if we really know Krishna, then we'll give our hearts to him. It's interesting. One thing that was quoted, that was not quoted, was mentioned at the end of our lecture last week in Hartford, one congregational member. He said that, let me think if I can remember exactly, he said, no one in their right mind could be envious of Krishna. That's what he said. Yeah, no one in their right mind could be envious of Krishna. Because I was explaining, I quoted the verse of Bhagavad Gita, Idam Te Goitamam Prabhakshamana Suyave, where Krishna says, because you're never envious of me, I shall impart this most secret wisdom to you, knowing which you should be relieved of all the miseries of material existence. So Krishna is sort of like, in that verse, he's establishing the criteria that if you're not envious of me, then you're qualified to know more about me. And that was Arjuna's qualification. He was never envious of Krishna. So we spoke about that in the topic, and then at the end of class, this devotee said, how could anybody be envious of Krishna? It doesn't make sense. No one in their right mind could be envious of Krishna. And I said, you're absolutely right, because only people who are in their right minds are not envious of Krishna. But unfortunately, most people aren't in the right minds. And I gave the example that if we take into consideration who Krishna is, and if we don't know why he does what he does, and if we don't know about him, why he's so reciprocal with his devotees, and how he's equal to all living beings, when we hear how Krishna is the Supreme Lord, who possesses everything, who controls everything, who only enjoys, and not only that, but he says that if you want to be happy, you should give everything to me. And then if we think in a mundane sense, well, if somebody has everything and he's asking look what I've got in comparison to what he's got, and he's asking me to give everything to him. You know, if we didn't know why Krishna's asking, we would be envious. Why are you asking for that? You look what you've got. You've got everything, and you're asking, hey, look what I got in comparison to you. And you're asking for everything. So, you know, if we don't know Krishna, why is he asking these things? We have grounds to be envious. Why are you asking such a thing of me? It's not fair. But the more we know about him, and the more we know about why he's asking these things of us, and the more we see or hear about, because it takes time before we can see, but at least we can see through our ears, the more we hear how loving he is, how reciprocal he is, and how he wants to share all the enjoyment that he has with us. And we hear about how he does share that enjoyment with others and makes them so fully satisfied. And how do they experience that full, complete satisfaction? In serving him. Then it seems very, very logical to follow that through and say, well, if the persons who are experiencing the highest happiness, they don't even think about their own happiness. They're so satisfied. And how are they experiencing that highest happiness? Is they're experiencing that highest happiness through service to Krishna. Then, when Krishna says, serve me and give everything to me, there's obviously a good intent behind it. Very good intention. He wants to give us that happiness. So the more we know about Krishna's personality, really know him, then in our right mind, we could never be envious of him. But unfortunately, many people are not in their right mind. And therefore, they think that when Krishna does something, or they blame him, or they think, you know, when he asks for something, when he asks us to surrender to him, when he asks for us to love him, and to serve him, we may think that, well, I've got more important things to do. I've got my choice, and my choice is, I've got other things that are more important to me right now, and he'll do fine without me. Unfortunately, many people think that way. And therefore, they're not in the right mind. So, therefore, an intelligent person will try to know more about Krishna. Why does he do what he does? And how can we see him, appreciate him, and experience his presence everywhere? Therefore, Krishna, in this chapter, he's speaking about himself so that we can learn how to appreciate his greatness. Because sometimes we like to emulate great people. You know, like somebody who's really great. You know, somebody who's really successful. And, you know, and therefore when we give the example, like if we find out that somebody that we had an acquaintance with, all of a sudden we find out he's a billionaire, we think, wow. Now that's great. Then immediately think like, how can I tap into that? How can I tap into that personality and become friends with him? You know, because he's so great. So, because that's our tendency, but then Krishna's saying, okay, you think they're great, but look at what I got. You're looking for great people? Well, these are my opulences. What do you think about these opulences? And that's what Krishna is doing in this chapter. Krishna is actually telling us in many different ways, which of course he's telling Arjuna, but for our benefit, how to see his opulences. And he's explaining how they're connected to me. course, there are many other opulences that Krishna describes in this chapter. This verse that we're speaking from tonight, Krishna is describing, he says here, all these qualities in living beings are created by me. What are the qualities he speaks about? Intelligence. Just like we may appreciate somebody for their intelligence. Well, Krishna says, well, they're all created. All these qualities are created by me. Intelligence, knowledge, freedom from doubt and delusion, forgiveness, truthfulness, control of the senses, control of the mind, happiness and distress, birth, death, fear, fearlessness, nonviolence, equanimity, satisfaction, austerity, charity, fame and infamy. All these various qualities of living beings are created by me alone. So, in the commentary, Srila Prabhupada will help us to see all of these qualities from a Krishna conscious perspective. Because in of themselves, they're not Krishna conscious. You know, there's many people who aren't very intelligent. And elsewhere in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, what is it? Maya Prahita Jnana. Those whose intelligence is stolen by illusion. Right? So Krishna describes persons who are never surrendered to him. Their intelligence, or Krishna says also in the Bhagavad Gita, elsewhere in the beginning, he says, the intelligence of those who are irresolute is many-branched. Right? He says, those who are resolute in purpose and their aim is one, they are, what is that verse? Help me. Vyavasigat Makabuhi translation. Those is resolute. What about them though?
Those are on this path are resolute in purpose.
Those who are on this path, that's right. Those who are on this path are resolute in purpose and their aim is one. But the intelligence of those who are irresolute is many branched. So Krishna in many places speaks about intelligence which is not connected to him. And therefore, Prabhupada is going to help us to see how all of these qualities which are created by Krishna, when properly utilized and can be appreciated as a means for understanding Krishna. So we talked about, last week, we talked about intelligence and knowledge, those two things we spoke about. I'll just read this, it's a short paragraph. I'll read it, but I won't speak about it because we'll go on to the other topics. Intelligence refers to the power to analyze things in their proper perspective. That's all he says about intelligence. But if we analyze things in the proper perspective, we could really expand on that unlimitedly. What is the proper perspective? Very simple. The proper perspective is to see everything connected to Krishna. That's proper perspective. To see whatever happens, to see whatever we experience in this world, to see how it is ultimately connected to Krishna. So that's intelligence. And knowledge refers to understanding what is spirit and what is matter. Ordinary knowledge obtained by a university education pertains only to matter and is not accepted here as knowledge. Knowledge means knowing the distinction between spirit and matter. In modern education, there is no knowledge about spirit. They are simply taking care of the material elements and bodily needs. Therefore, academic knowledge is not complete. When we spoke about this topic last week, we just simply quoted one thing that Prabhupada said right here in Boston at MIT. And simply, I think it was in 1969, Prabhupada was giving a lecture in MIT. And he was speaking to a group of students and faculty members, and in the course of his presentation, he said, where in this university are they teaching the difference between a dead man and a living man? And nobody had an answer to that question. As usual, Prabhupada stumped them. And then, of course, he went on to explain what is the difference. He said, because he was claiming, because the university is not doing it, therefore I have to do it. And therefore, I will tell you now, what is the difference? So that he was simply trying to emphasize the point that simply academic knowledge is not sufficient, that real knowledge means to know matter and spirit, and who is the controller of both. So as we said, we won't speak more about that because we spoke about that last week. The next is asamoha. Freedom from doubt and delusion can be achieved when one is not hesitant and when he understands the transcendental philosophy. Slowly but surely he becomes free from bewilderment. Nothing should be accepted blindly. Everything should be accepted with care and with caution. This is how Prabhupada explains asamoha, freedom from doubt and delusion. Where is it someplace Krishna says, touch your nose. Now here, Arjuna, how you can become... Huh? 7-1. Yes. 7-1, that's right. Oh yes, that's right. That's true. No. Maya sakta mana partha yogam yujam marashiya asang sayam samagramam yata gyasyasi touch chindu. Now here, O Sandaprita, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attachment attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. Same word here, freedom from doubt. So, Prabhupada says that this can be achieved when one is not hesitant and when he understands the transcendental philosophy. Slowly but surely he becomes free from bewilderment. And then, interesting, he says that nothing should be accepted blindly. Everything should be accepted with care and with caution. Prabhupada actually said in one time, he said about himself, although he says that one should not follow blindly here, or nothing should be accepted blindly, he said at one point, when one actually sees and one understands the transcendental philosophy, having heard appropriately from transcendental shabda, sound vibration, and then when one experiences that the person who is presenting that philosophy is presenting it without any interpretation, and is not only presenting it without interpretation, but exemplifies in every way the teachings about which he speaks, then Prabhupada said about his own spiritual master, he said, having understood by listening with faith the words of my spiritual master, therefore, now I blindly follow him. So Prabhupada said that about himself. So one would say, well, it seems like a contradiction. Prabhupada says right here in this commentary, don't follow blindly. He said that everything should be accepted with care and with caution. Nothing should be accepted blindly. But then he himself stated, I follow my spiritual master blindly. So, how to reconcile is because he did accept with faith, and because he accepted with faith, he transcended simply the knowledge through jnana, which is theoretical, and then by following the instructions and applying with faith, then he gained realized knowledge, which he speaks about in this way. Bijnana. Krishna says, idam tu te guya tamam pravakshama nasuyave jnana vijnana sahitam yajyatra moksha seshubhad. Prabhupada quotes this verse, that jnana vijnana. Jnana is theoretical knowledge, but vijnana is realized knowledge. So having realized knowledge, therefore, from that platform of realization, one is convinced that beyond a shadow of a doubt, that I've gotten this realization only by the mercy of my spiritual master. No qualification on my part, because a genuine disciple, a genuine sadhaka, transcendentalist, Krishna certifies himself, yogi nama pisavisha magita nataratmana. He says the greatest yogi is one who always abides in Krishna with great faith, worshipping him in devotional service, is most intimately united with him and is the highest of all. He describes that the symptom of a devotee is one who never takes credit himself for anything positive that manifests in terms of spiritual advancement and spiritual realization. He knows that that realization of Krishna can only be achieved by divine grace. And therefore, when we speak about Srila Prabhupada, we speak about his spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, we know that they are specifically entitled as his divine grace, which means that he represents divine grace. And the difference between a devotee and a jnani, who simply is more interested in theoretical understanding, is that a devotee is one who is always dependent on Krishna's divine grace. He's always dependent on Krishna's mercy. But a jnani, one who's simply attached to knowledge, he thinks, on the strength of my knowledge, I will know God. He's not interested in mercy. No interest whatsoever. He thinks that by my intellectual pursuits, by my analysis, by my study of scripture, even though scriptures say, Bhagavat bhakti hinasya jati shastram japastava apranasiva dehanam mandanam lokaranjanam. Scriptures say that for a person who's devoid of devotional service, even if he knows all the scriptures, even if he's expert at citing hundreds and hundreds, thousands of shlokas, even if he performs severe austerities, even if he takes birth in a great family or nation, Bhagavad Bhakti Hitasya Jati Shastram Tapastapa, he says, they're, all of these are just like ornaments on a dead body. They simply serve the concoction, the mental concoctions of the general populace. So what is the value if by our own academic pursuit we try to understand the Supreme Lord Brahma in his prayers to Krishna in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam? He says such persons who approach the Supreme Lord by this method, by their thinking by their own knowledge they can know Krishna, he says they're like persons who beat an empty husk of wheat to get grain. You beat an empty husk of wheat, what do you get?
Nothing.
Hard labor. That's all you get. There's nothing else in there.
Yes.
You get, that's what Lord Brahma says. They only get their hard labor. But no grain. So he says the persons who approach you in this way, they think that they'll approach you, but no. Krishna says in many places in the Bhagavatam, Atapite deva padambaja buya prasadala sanagrihi tehevihi. He says, unless one gets a drop of mercy from my lotus feet, they can never understand my greatness, the greatness of my personality. He says, you can try. You can try to understand. But Krishna holds the cards. He's the one that reveals. He's got everything within his grip. You can say, I'm going to know you. I'm going to know you by my... But unless he reveals, you can't know anything. And he says, in so many places in Bhagavad Gita, he says that... What is that verse? Sorry. I know it. I quote it so many times. And Krishna says, I've never manifested those who are foolish and unintelligent. For them I have covered by my eternal creative potency, yoga maya. And so the whole world knows me not, who am unborn and infallible. I remember the English, but I can't remember the Sanskrit. So he said, I've never manifested those who are foolish and unintelligent. For them, yoga maya, I'm covered by my maya. So Krishna creates the Maya, which covers us. And because Krishna creates the Maya, which covers us, and he's the controller of Maya, the only way to know him is when he removes the Maya. We could try to remove it by our own efforts. But, as I said, Krishna's holding all the cards. He says, Dāvīyeṣu guṇamayī mama māyā dorācīyā. Krishna makes it very clear. Mama māyā, it's my māyā, not yours. Dāvīyeṣu guṇamayī mama māyā dorācīyā. Māmevīye prapajate, māyā metam dorātite. This divine nature of mine consisting of the three modes of material nature is very difficult to overcome. But if you surrender unto me, what happens? Krishna says, okay, Maya, leave him alone.
Come back.
Leave him alone. Well, that's all it takes. It's just Krishna says, Maya, I want him.
Come back.
And Maya is very submissive to Krishna. When Krishna says, I want him, she's... But if we struggle by our own efforts to overcome Maya, then we don't get, we get the empty husk of grain, you know, hard labor, mental speculation. So, Prabhupada makes the point, and other of our previous acharyas make the point, that those who are interested simply in theoretical knowledge, that by dint of their own strength, mental strength, intellectual strength, they think they can achieve a perfectional state and no Krishna. But such persons, as we said, they're not interested in Krishna's mercy. And because they're not interested in Krishna's mercy, they don't get divine grace. And if they don't get divine grace, then the result is that you'll keep on thinking that, well, it's coming. Someday I'll get it, and I'll just keep on going. And then at some point, one has to realize that it can only be understood when Krishna reveals. Like, there are many examples in our Shastra, examples of great pundits, like Keshava Kashmiri, who was a very learned scholar. And he was known as the Digvijay. He would defeat everybody. He was very proud of his ability to immediately compose thousands, hundreds of prayers and glorification. He could speak about any topic. Mother Saraswati was always on his tongue. And yet, when he came in the presence of Nimai Pandit, and he offered Nimai's Pandit, who was the greatest scholar of the Supreme Lord, he asked him, could you please compose some prayers and glorification of the Ganges? And then he immediately composed 100 prayers, spontaneously, glorification of the Ganges. And Nimai said, very good. But then he picked out in one verse, in the middle, there were three discrepancies. And nobody had ever done this to the Digvijay before. But Nimai Pandit found them, exposed them. And the Digvijay was like overwhelmed. This never happened. He's like, and everybody else who was around, all of Nimai's students, they started. And Nimai said, no, don't embarrass him. He didn't want to kill him. Because this scholar, this Digvijay, was so proud of his knowledge that if he was defeated and embarrassed in front of, he probably would have taken his life. And Nimai Pandit knew that and said, no. He told the Pandit, you go home and you think about what I've told you. And the Digvijay Pandit went home, and that night the goddess Saraswati appeared before him in a dream and said, oh, you think? You don't know? You not know who that person was that you were speaking to. He said, do you know why you couldn't say anything after he defeated you? He said, because I couldn't appear on your tongue. I couldn't appear because I can't. I was too embarrassed to appear in the presence of the knower, of the controller of me. And therefore, although previously you could speak such eloquent verses and you could recite thousands of verses and poetry spontaneously. That one moment when he exposed you, he said, I couldn't come and therefore you couldn't speak. And she explained all this to him in the dream and said, if you want to actually to achieve real knowledge, then you tomorrow you go back to him. Because he is none other than the Supreme Lord. And you should go and you should fall at his lotus feet and submit yourself to him. So Digvijaya Pandit understood, and then the next day when he came back to return before Nimai Pandit, immediately fell on Nimai and said, oh, what happened? Why this change in you? And then, of course, the Pandit spoke and glorified the Lord. And he became a great devotee of the Lord. So the point is that somebody's mobile phone? Competition. Must be transcendental sound vibration coming to expose me.
But there was something
different. You should buy a Bhagavad Gita for $5.
So the point is that if one wants realized knowledge, then he has to submit and be fully dependent on mercy. And when one is fully dependent on mercy and is willing, as Prabhupada explains right here, he says that when one is not hesitant and when he understands the transcendental philosophy, slowly but surely he becomes free from bewilderment. How does he become free from bewilderment? Krishna says, Tesham avanam kampartam aham ajnana jamtama nashayam yatma bhavasto gyanadipena basvata. He says, out of compassion for them, I am dwelling within their hearts, I destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. That is how they become free from bewilderment. But Krishna acts from within the heart to reveal. And when Krishna acts within the heart to reveal, then this is called bijnan, realized. Realized knowledge. Which doesn't come by the strength of our jnan, it comes from the strength of our bhakti. Not on the strength of our jnan, on the strength of devotion. Because Krishna told Arjuna, because you're never envious of me. You're never envious of me. Therefore, I'll give you more. Where does he say this? I'll give you more and more. And this is right in the very beginning of the chapter of 9, the most confidential knowledge. It's natural. It's natural when somebody's not envious, then you're going to start becoming a confidant. He'll take you into confidence. An envious person will think, well, how can I take him into confidence? He's going to misuse whatever I tell him about me. If he's envious and I tell him something very confidential about me, who knows how it's going to come back to me and stab me in the back in the future. Isn't it?
Yes.
You don't expose confidential things about yourself to somebody who's envious of you. So Krishna says to Arjuna, because you're never envious of me, I'm going to reveal this most confidential knowledge about me. That was Arjuna's qualification. And then Krishna revealed very confidential knowledge in the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Most confidential. And now here in the 10th chapter, he's giving more. Giving more about his opulences. How you could see him. Appreciate him. See him in everything. This is what happens when a person understands the transcendental philosophy. And then, by understanding the transcendental philosophy, one doesn't become hesitant to act. I mean, that's what Arjuna did. When Krishna completed his instructions in Bhagavad Gita, he says, okay, Krishna, he said, excuse me, now, okay, Arjuna, now that you've heard everything I've had to say, You do what you want to do. You make the decision. You decide. And then what did Arjuna do? He acted with firm conviction. All his doubts were dispelled. Completely dispelled. How were his doubts dispelled? Well, because he accepted Krishna as a worthy person to dispel them. He said, "Oh, Madhusudana, please kill these demon doubts within me." Karpanya dosho bahatasva bhava prichdami tamdama samudha cheta. He said, "Now I'm a soul surrendered unto you. You tell me. You tell me." And he didn't say, "Oh, no, Krishna, I don't like what you just said just now. Forget it. Let's back up and
do something.
I'm going to backpedal now. Like, I think I've gone too far. I don't like what I've heard now. It's a little bit too much." No. Krishna kept on going more and more. Why? Because he surrendered. And because he surrendered, he became free from doubt. And then later in Bhagavad Gita, he says, "Okay, now I know who you are. Param Brahma, Param Dhamma." He says, "You're the Supreme Lord. Now I know who you are. Not only do I see this, but Devala, Asita, Vyas, everybody else, they say the same thing. I finally got it." He realized. He surrendered. So at that point, when one surrenders to the right person, not to the wrong person, but to the right person, one surrenders to the right person, then at that point one says, "I blindly follow. I blindly follow." But how to get there? Prabhupada's telling you how to get there. Okay. Don't be hesitant. Listen. Freedom from doubt and delusion can be achieved when one is not hesitant, when he understands the transcendental philosophy. Slowly but surely he becomes free from bewilderment. Nothing should be accepted blindly. Everything should be accepted with care and with caution. I only spoke about Asamoha. There's still Kshama, Satyam, many others, and we'll probably continue with those topics next Sunday, wherever I'll be, I'm not sure. Any questions? Comments?
When Srila Prabhupada talked about following his spiritual master blindly, there's always the scope of asking for clarification when one doesn't understand the instructions or the message clearly. Is that how I understand correctly?
The scope for understanding the instructions, yes, certainly for inquiring deeply. But Prabhupada is specifically speaking from this realized state of consciousness where everything is clear.
So I'm talking more for those who are beginners.
Well, that's what he says right here. I already explained that. That's what the whole lecture was about. The whole lecture was about, for though until one gets to that realization, when everything is realized and clear, then what does one have to do? Slowly but surely becomes free from bewilderment. Nothing should be accepted blindly. Everything should be accepted with care and with caution. That's right there. Because Prabhupada is a teacher, he knows his audience, and he knows their ability to doubt. So Prabhupada made it very clear. Accept things with care and caution. But Prabhupada didn't have to do that with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta anymore. That was the point that I was making. We should try to come to that point. Because unless we come to that point, mercy won't flow. Just won't flow. As long as we're resistant, it won't flow. We may become partial recipients, yes. But if we really want that mercy to flow, it can only come. Krishna says, right to Arjuna, he says, "How does the mercy flow? Is it only by undivided devotional service can you know me as I am standing before you, Arjuna? Only then can you really enter into the mysteries of understanding me." Undivided, unmotivated devotional service. That means fully surrendered. So that's our aspiration. We should keep that above our heads always as our aspiration. Yes, that's where I want to go. Because until I go there, I'm all going to be stuck with all of my doubts and my inability to clear them up by my own efforts. And in fact, by my own efforts, I only find I become more doubtful. It's the transcendental science. Sorry, Prabhu. It's what Krishna says. I can only repeat. It's 6 o'clock. It's time for Aarti. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.